Well, it's an honor to be back at Prayer of Faith, and certainly always a golden opportunity every time that Jack and I get together to share. I believe it was last spring that we first met. Actually, we started taking a class together, a coaching certification class, and now we're taking another class together. And he and I kind of hit it up. We were paired up as peers, didn't know each other, and have got to know each other pretty well and enjoy one another's fellowship. And it's a real honor and to be here today. And Jack, I just want to say thank you for inviting me.
I like to hang around him just to hear his Carolina accent. You love that? One of my favorite sayings he says is, "Looky here."
I've had a number of people that ask me about where I was from, and I tell them Oklahoma City, and they say, "Well, you don't sound like you're from Oklahoma City." I've shared this several times. I don't know if I shared it here or not, but I actually was coming back from Salt Lake City and had a woman to sit down across the aisle from me, and she heard me say something, and she asked me where I was from. And I told her I was from Oklahoma City, and she says, "Well, you don't sound like you're from Oklahoma City." And I said, "Well, where do I sound like I'm from?" And she says, "You're from the South." And I said, "Well, I was born and raised in South Carolina." She said, "Well, that explains it." And she said, "But I understand that y'all have high humidity in that part of the country." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." I said, "Especially in the summertime. It's very high." And she said, "Well, I've always heard that high humidity slows the aging process." I said, "Well, that is interesting." I said, "Well, how old do you think I am?" And she says, "How old are you?" I said, "72. Now, in case somebody didn't get that, I'm not 72.
71.
I'm 73. Now, I'm just a tad older than Jack. It's also good today for me to have several members of my family. Of course, my wife, she's actually been here before, Imogene. When we walked in the door today, Philip was there, and of course he spoke to me, and then he looked at Imogene, and she says, "Imogene." He says, "Well, that's a good, what was it, a good southern name? A good southern name." I said, "Well, I'm a Terry." But I also have my son-in-law, Wayne Kirby, and my daughter, Tara. They're here. And the first time I came here and ministered, I actually had another friend with us, Nan Carpenter. Dr. Carpenter is the vice chairman of our church and serves as director of Evangelism USA. And his wife was with us. He was on a trip, and her name was Nan. And at that time, I made the statement that I had my second wife with me also. And so today I have my third wife, Miss Olivia Avalov. Actually, Olivia's husband serves as our director of Hispanic Ministries. And he's in the state of Washington today. And so she's traveling with us today, and Olivia's a good friend to us, and especially to Imogene. She and Imogene are real close friends. But it's good to have them with us today as well. And I'm going to do something today that I've never done. And that is somewhat do a chronological story of my life and how it involved hearing the voice of God. Jack and I are involved in this class called Life Focus, and it really causes us to focus on who we are. And this is really a real help in that class. So Jack's helping me do some homework assignments here too. But I've never really given a lot of thought to some of the things that as I started preparing this, how I've been hearing the voice of God. You know, you have a tendency sometimes to think about how God speaks to you primarily. But there's a lot of ways that God speaks that sometimes at the time that he's speaking, we don't realize it. To give you an example there, a biblical example, if you remember when Balaam, the story of Balaam, you know, it's hard to believe that a donkey could actually have better hearing and vision than a prophet. But on that story, he did. But I want to zero in on some experiences that I've had. And in fact, I've actually listed about 14 different ways that I've actually heard the voice of God. And Jack's already mentioned the first, and I'll just begin there. When I was six, I was not, my parents were not Christians at that time. In fact, my dad didn't get saved till 2 years before his death. My mother got saved, and I'll mention that in just a few moments. But I went to church some with my grandmother, who was very religious. And you've heard the old cliche that about shouting holiness people. She was one of those shouting holiness people. And somebody said one time that she would shout at the drop of a hat. She would even drop the hat. But she was very devoted to God. And every opportunity she had, she took me to church. Took my brothers and I to church. A sister a few years later when she came, about 10 years later. But I remember her brother asked me the question one time, and at that time I was not really involved in church to any degree, but he asked me a question. He says, "Terry, what you going to be when you grow up?" And the first impression that came to my mind, and why I couldn't answer at that time, I said, "I'm going to be a preacher." Not knowing that I was actually prophesying my destiny. And didn't realize that God had anything to do with that at that particular moment. And that's significant because I thought about that a number of times in my early years, that I'm going to be a preacher. And it absolutely scared the life out of me. Because when I looked at preachers having to stand up before congregations every week, I thought to myself, I don't think I want to do that. And when I did give my first sermon, I was kind of like Jack. I was fear and trembling. In fact, I was so nervous I almost delivered my supper. So I know how it feels to stand up before people and you feel like you have 10,000 knots in your stomach. And from the age of 6 to 12, there were many times that I thought about God and that I needed to get saved. It's amazing how early I learned my need to get saved. Because even at age 6, I knew I needed to be saved. But yet here I am saying I'm going to be a preacher and I'm not even saved. And I've heard people say, though, that God doesn't talk to people that are not saved. Now, I disagree with that because he does. He did to me. And I'll probably give you some other examples. And moving to the time that I was 12 was a very significant moment in my life because I was attending a revival in the church that my grandmother went to. And my mother had started going to church, though she had not given her heart to God at that time. But one Sunday morning, I remember sitting beside her on the second bench in the middle of that church, and I remember the evangelist that was preaching. His name was Angelo Germano. I'd never met him before that revival, but he made a profound impression on my young heart. And all during that revival, I went, I guess, every service. And I wanted to get saved, but every time I thought about getting saved, that thought came back to me, if I get saved, I'm going to have to be a preacher. So I decided I was not going to get saved. Because I don't think I want to be a preacher. But I thought about it over and over and again. And that morning, my mother, at the invitation, gave her heart to the Lord. And she got saved. And I wanted more than anything else in the world to go to the altar and get saved. But I didn't go and get saved because that thought came back to me, if I get saved, I'm going to have to be a preacher. And you just put yourself in the mind of a 12-year-old. I'm 12 years old, I can't preach. I wasn't thinking in the future, I was thinking right now, I'm going to have to preach right now. And I'm not ready to do that. In fact, when I was very young, I was extremely shy. Now, some folks find that very difficult to believe today, but I really was very shy. I actually had gone home, or would go home with a friend, and they would ask me if I wanted anything to eat, but I was so shy, I'd tell them no. I'd lie. I wanted what they had, but I was too shy to eat in front of them. That has radically changed. I'm not ashamed to eat in front of anybody anymore. But I didn't get saved then. And so for the next 8 years, I really drifted a long way from the church and started doing a lot of things that a lot of teenagers do. And church became less important to me. And I would go to church when it was convenient or when I had an interest in a girl. I'd go to church. And really then I only went to Sunday school because that's where I could be close to all the girls at one time. So I went to Sunday school, and after Sunday school I'd go back home and never stay for preaching. Except on special occasions. If they were going to feed, you know, eat. And on Easter and on Christmas programs and stuff of that nature. And so for the next 4 years, I was in and out of church. I'd go to Sunday school. Sometimes I'd go regular for several weeks, and then I'd miss for several weeks. And in those days, if you missed 3 weeks in a row, it took your name off the roll, so you had to rejoin. So I kept rejoining Sunday school. And I remember an incident that happened once, time when I was 16 years old, and I really hadn't thought about this experience for a long time. But when I was 16 years old, and bear in mind, I grew up in, when I went to church, it was a holiness church. So there were, and at that time, they were extremely legalistic about some things. To go swimming on Sunday was a great sin. Well, on Sunday afternoon, I was out sinning at the river. And we had a 65-foot bridge that went over that river. And we boys, several of us, would jump off that bridge. And I was showing off. They had a ledge. Got on that ledge. I jumped off. And just as I jumped, somebody says, "Look out, there's a boat coming." Well, what are you going to do? I'm coming down. And I look, and I see the boat. And they don't see me. And I'm jumping right in the middle of the river, right where the boat's running. I hit the water and the boat runs over me. And to this day, I cannot explain it, but I didn't get hurt, didn't get scratched, didn't get cut, nothing happened. Except it scared the living daylights out of me. I mean, I was trembling. I got to the bank and I was literally shaking. Trembling all over, because I knew that I had almost met death, and I was sinning. Well, for the next, it got me religious for a few weeks. But God spoke to me. I knew that I almost faced death, and it was an experience that I couldn't get away from. And so I didn't say anything to anybody. Other than everybody just couldn't figure out what had happened. How come I didn't get hurt? Because they were out sinning too. They couldn't put it in spiritual terms. They were as big a sinners as I was. And I'm not, I don't want to mislead anybody. I'm not saying that swimming is a sin if you do it on Sunday or any other time. But in my mind, it was wrong. But I knew I was a sinner because I'd never been saved. I was not ready to meet God. But that was kind of a wake-up call for me. And it got me spiritual for a few weeks. But after the emotion of it kind of worn off, I fell right back into my same old routine again. At the age of 19, I had a very unusual experience. At the age when, at this time, a friend of mine by the name of Rodney and I had our own bachelor pad. And we were living our lives out of the control and the restraints of any family members. And so we could just do what we wanted to, come in when we got ready to, and so forth, as long as we kept our jobs. But every so often, especially on Sunday, I would go by my mother's house because I would make sure to go there when dinner was being prepared. I knew she was going to invite me to eat because she was a great cook, and Rodney was a terrible cook. And I was, at that time, I wasn't much better. And you can't eat, afford to eat every meal out. So we went by my mother's house, and we had done that before. But on this particular Sunday, she reminded me of a promise that I'd made to her. She said, she had asked me about going to church. Every time I went there, she would always ask me about going to church. And I'd somehow wiggle out of it. But and the time that I went before, I had promised her the next time I come by, this on Sunday, I'll go to church with you on Sunday night. Well, I had forgotten I'd made that promise. And I came in for lunch. The time I get through eating, she says, "You remember what you promised me the last time you came?" And I remembered. I tried to make out that I didn't, but I did. And I did everything I could to get out of it. Then I looked at my friend. I said, "Well, Rodney, I know we're supposed to go to that party tonight, about 15 miles away from here, a little town called Aner. We were supposed to go to a party." And I told him, I said, "Well, why don't we just go to church? As soon as church said, we'll leave." He said, "Nah," he said, "I'm not going to church." And I said, "Well, if you're not going, I'm not going either." And for some reason, I couldn't say no to my mother this particular time. So I stayed, almost convinced Rodney into staying with me. But he left and was supposed to pick me back up at 9 o'clock. Well, 9 o'clock came, and he didn't. But I need to share, first of all, what happened at church that night. The conference superintendent of the South Carolina Conference was actually speaking that night, which I didn't know that, and didn't know him at that particular time, but I'd heard his name before. But anyway, we went to church, and the conference superintendent was preaching. And you know when a man's preaching and God is in it, how uncomfortable it makes somebody that's not living right is. I got very uncomfortable in that service. And as soon as he gave his invitations, I'd like for everybody to bow their heads. I said, "This is my opportunity. I'm getting out of here." Now I was sitting there, hadn't heard it for some time, but if I get saved, I got to be a preacher. So I get up out of my seat and I turn my back. I'm on the back seat to go out of the door. And he said, "Young man." And I said, "Oh, Lord." You know, "Young man." I looked around. There's nobody else standing. I know he's talking to me. And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Please don't leave yet." He says, "In fact," he said, "I'd like for you to come and stand up here." But what am I going to do? He's put me in a very awkward position. My mother's sitting there, and I know she says, "Hey, I hope you don't run," you know. But he says, "In fact," he didn't slow down. But he says, "I want you to come up here. In fact, I'd like for every young person in here under the age of 25 years old to come and stand across the front of this church." Well, that made it a little easier for me. And I'm glad he, undoubtedly, the Lord gave him a little wisdom, because I'm not sure what I'd have done if everybody else hadn't been included. But we were all standing in front of the church. And he prays a prayer over the entire group. And I'm down on this end. He comes down here, stands right in front of me. He doesn't come to me. He just says, "Young man, I don't know who you are, but God's hand is on your life, and you need to stop running." Well, I didn't say anything, but I actually did pray a prayer. "God, don't let nobody touch me." That's exactly what I prayed. "Don't let nobody touch me. If somebody would have touched me, I'd have wilted." By then, I had a little bit of pride, too. Didn't want nobody to see, look, I was at the verge of tears. Didn't want nobody to see me cry. I was ready to get out of there. At the same time, I wanted more than anything else in the world to get saved. But didn't. Because I kept hearing that word, "You get saved, you got to be a preacher." So I left, went home. I had an emotional experience with God that night. I didn't get saved. But for some reason, I felt good. I felt good. I couldn't explain it. And I went back home and I waited for Rodney to pick me up. 9 o'clock came, he didn't come. 10 o'clock came, he didn't come. I watched the 11 o'clock news, he still hadn't come. I drifted off to sleep, laying on the couch. And at 4 a.m., the phone rung. And it was Rodney's mother, and she was at the Conway Hospital, and she says, "Terry, I need you to come to the hospital. Rodney's been shot, and they're going to take him, transport him to Charleston," which was a major medical center about 100 miles away. Well, My dad's there. I get his car. We go to the hospital. And they drop me off. Time I get there, they load him up on the ambulance to take him to Charleston. I go to Charleston with him. Long story short, Rodney and another friend of mine had got into a scuffle at that party that I was supposed to go to. And the guy jumped in his car and ran, and they chased him to his house. He ran into his house. They pulled up into his driveway. He came out of the house and shot through the window. Hit Rodney in the face. He's still living, but he's totally blind today. My other friend got shot down the side. He recovered. He died about a year ago with cancer. But I thought 1,000 times, what if I hadn't to, for some reason, that day I couldn't tell my mother no. Do you think God spoke to me through that? You would think that I would have been ready to make my confession. But I didn't. But I did go to church more regular. Started going to church fairly regular. Moved back into my home, my parents' home. And it was not until March the 3rd, the following year, when I was 20, that I actually gave my heart to the Lord. Now, bear in mind, another revival came. I went every night to that revival for 14 nights. Every night I wanted to get saved. And every night I would leave. 13 nights in a row I left. The last night, the evangelist insulted me. A friend of mine was sitting on the back seat, and I said, let's go out and smoke a cigarette. We were out on the church steps, just lit up my Marlboro, and that preacher, who was about 400 plus pounds, he was huge. I mean, he was 6 foot standing up or laying down. I mean, he was huge. You get the picture. He came out and he took his finger and he says, young man, you may die and go to hell, but you don't have no right to take this young guy with you. This guy about 16, 17 years old that was sitting beside me. I went and got in my car and I thought to myself, who does that big fat preacher think he is? Made me mad. Embarrassed me. But I left. I stayed out all night. Came back home at 6 o'clock in the morning. Went to bed just from exhaustion. Went to sleep. Got up about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. And all afternoon I walked around in my front yard, in my backyard. Didn't let nobody see me. And I said, God, give me the courage to get saved. All afternoon long. Went back to church, night 14. Preacher preached, gave the invitation, and I did the same thing I'd done 13 other nights. I turned my back to walk out. But for some reason, I turned around, and I saw a 68-year-old man who I knew was a bigger sinner than me walking towards the altar, and I took my first step towards the altar. And when I did, I can't explain it, but it felt just like I left the floor about 6 inches and just glided down to the altar. Had a divine encounter with God that radically changed my life. Confessed my sins. He filled me with His Spirit. And I accepted the call to preach the same night that I got saved. I already knew it. You know, it was not something I could wiggle out of. If I get saved, I got to preach. So I said, okay, God, if you will save me, I'll preach. I'll do whatever you want me to do. That fall, I went to Bible school. I could tell you a long story, but I won't take too long here. I went to Bible school, but in between the time that I got saved and the time I went to Bible school, my pastor asked me to speak, to preach. Now, I'd been saved a couple of months at that time, and that's when I almost threw up my supper. When he asked me, not when he asked me, but when I stood before that congregation, and I had prepared all week long. And I thought I had prepared about a 30-minute sermon. I preached every bit of it in 5 minutes. I was through. Haven't done that since. But I did it that time. But I realized after that experience, I said, God, if preaching could be like this, I don't like it no better than I did before. I didn't like it. I was intimidated to death. And I realized what I need is to go and study the Scriptures, because I am so ignorant of what God's Word is. How in the world can I preach something I have absolute no knowledge of? Other than I did know a little bit about the Ten Commandments, and I knew John 3:16. But I didn't know a lot about the Scriptures, and certainly not about expounding the Scriptures. Well, I spent the next 3 years in intense Bible school. Graduated 3 years after I entered. But I had a couple of experiences while I was at Bible school that I want to mention. And one experience that I left out, and I need to go back because it's so critical of hearing the voice of God. Right about the same time that the preacher asked me to preach that first sermon, I had my first vision from God. And it's a vision that has come back three times, maybe even more. But I'm specifically mentioned three times that vision's come back to me. The same vision. But I was asleep, and I heard someone call my voice. To me, it was audible. Just like Jack was to say, Terry. That's all I heard, Terry. But I was asleep, and what woke me up was that voice of very gently saying, Terry. Like you're waking somebody up, Terry. And when I opened my eyes, I could see this full-length shepherd standing right by me. Couldn't really see what his face was, just a shepherd. He was a shepherd. There was a flock out in the field. It was night. The shepherd, one thing I noticed about him was that he had a lamb in his arms. He was holding that lamb right up close to his chest, watching the flock, and he called my name. When I opened my eyes, that's what I saw. And being extremely young in the Lord, and still a young man too, I didn't really understand what was going on. And so I kind of discounted it as, this is some kind of dream. I thought I was awake, but I thought I was asleep. Does it make sense? Anyway, I went back to sleep, woke up to the same thing. Not twice, but three times. The third time, that it was so real to me that I got out of bed, went into the kitchen, into the dining room area close to where my bedroom, to see if somebody was in there calling my name. That's how real it was to me. Now, the only time that I ever remember hearing my name or hearing something audible is that experience. I've never heard something audible since. But that time, it was audible to me, because I heard, that's what woke me up, Terry. Woke me up three times. At that time, I didn't really understand the vision. Didn't have an interpretation for it. In fact, it took me about 3 years to begin to interpret what that really meant. But I went off to Bible school. But I remember my first year of Bible school, one night that I was hard and fast asleep, but all of a sudden just woke up for no apparent reason, and I had an extremely tremendous burden to pray for my brother, who is 17 months older than I am, who is not a Christian today. And I've never told him this story that I'm telling you right now. I may at some point in time. But I woke up extremely burdened. I mean, felt like 10 tons was just lowered down on me that I had to pray for my brother right then. And I got out of bed and got on my knees and started praying. Didn't know why, but I prayed for about an hour. Went back to bed. Felt the burden left. I went back to bed. Didn't understand that. And it was several weeks later, in a conversation with a friend of my brother's, said, "Did you hear about Keith? What happened here but 3-4 weeks ago?" I said, "No, what you're talking about?" And long story short, they told me And of course, I had been able to calculate the time. I said, when did this happen? That a guy was standing before him. Is it Randy? Like I'm standing before Randy, said both of them were standing up. They had had a major confrontation of some sort, and this guy pulls out a pistol and sticks it right in his face. Then I understood why God woke me up. And there were several people that said they can't believe that guy didn't pull the trigger because he was mean. And they said, it's God's mercy he didn't blow his head off. I want to stop there for just a second. If God puts a burden on you for someone, don't hesitate. You never know what the result may be. But when I was 23... I wasn't sure about what I was supposed to do other than I knew that I was supposed to be in some sort of full-time ministry. Now, comes time to graduate from Bible school. What am I going to do? I did what every Bible school student is supposed to do. I'm supposed to go to a church. And at that time, I interpreted that vision I'd had 3 years before about Jesus, the shepherd, seeing the flock, holding the lamb. I said, well, undoubtedly God wants me to be a pastor. I assumed that. And I don't think I was off base, because I do think that was part of that vision. And that God wanted me to know that He had called me, that He knew me by name. And so I submitted myself to my leadership at that time. I graduated on a Tuesday, and on Sunday they assigned me to a church. A little small church. The first Sunday I was there, the pastor that I was replacing had a family of 8. So there was a total of 17 in that church. The second Sunday we had 9 because she and her family left. Now I could tell you a story, and it makes you wonder, you know, your experiences sometimes, how was God in some of these experiences? Because it didn't take me long. I felt like I had gone to the land of Nod. Because this was in the middle of nowhere. But I learned some valuable lessons there about learning to depend on God. But long story short, I began to... I rehashed that vision about pastoring. God wants me to care for this flock, and that's the way I interpreted it at that particular time. One thing I do need to mention in connection to when I left Bible school, Imogen was working for the Mercedes dealership in Greenville, South Carolina, near where I went to school. And he didn't want her to quit. He wanted her to stay on. She'd been working with him for, 2 years at that time. He wanted to keep her on and made her an awful good job proposal. Offered me a great proposal. He says, why don't you just continue your education? I'll pay for it. I'll give you a car to drive. Who wouldn't want a Mercedes?